So the Dhamma for today is two people who are hard to find in the world. Two people that are hard to find in the world are called Pubhakari and Katanyu Katavedi. Pubhakari, Pubha means before. Previously, Kari means one who does, one who did. So Pubhakari is someone who has done something for someone else, unbidden. And Katanyu Katavedi, one who recognizes that which others have done for them and feels a sense of the need to pay them back or to return the favor. Buddha said these are two people who are hard to find in the world. So you notice this language, hard to find, this language of exceptionalism is an important part of the Buddha's teaching. It's something that distinguishes Buddhism from some other religions. Buddhism isn't a religion of mediocrity, of conformity. And certainly many Buddhists or people who call themselves Buddhist are ordinary individuals without any exceptional qualities. But the teachings themselves don't tell you to be that way, don't teach you to fit in or to conform. They teach exceptionalism. So when the Buddha says this sort of person is hard to find in the world, that's considered a good thing, or that makes it something to be aspired for towards. Of course, the goal of enlightenment is the most exceptional, rare, and desirable state in the Buddha's teaching. So these two are stated in this way, I think, as a means of reminding us of how greedy and jealous and stingy the world of ordinary people is. Ordinary people are very focused on their own gain and their own benefit, and are lacking in the capacity to greatly appreciate the qualities of others or the good deeds of others. A worthwhile goal in the Buddha's teaching is the cultivation of both of these qualities. Of course, a good person of any religion or of no religion, of any culture, will already begin to exhibit these qualities. There are two things that you might say are a sign of wholesomeness, a sign of goodness, a sign of mental cultivation. Pubhakari refers to this quality of beings as taking the initiative to help others. Not doing things simply because of the material gain that it brings to oneself. So for many people, the only way they would be encouraged to help others is through gain for themselves. People teach because of a gain. They teach for a salary or that sort of thing. Even ordinary good deeds are quite often tainted by the desire for remuneration. For example, we might do good deeds as Buddhists, hoping for the results of good karma, hoping to be born in heaven or to be rich. More obviously, we might perform good deeds expecting a return from the recipients of our gifts. Parents, for example. We think of our parents as a true source of generosity. And there certainly is generosity involved with being a parent. And yet, quite often, there is a sense of obligation towards the parents that when they have helped you, that you should return the favor. And obviously, there's truth to that. Your parents have done great things for you. Your parents are the first pubakari, the ones who did without any expectation, you might say. However, it's quite common for the parents to become upset when the children don't fulfill their obligations, or when the children are ungrateful. One quality, true quality of a pubakari, is that they have no sense of expectation for the recipients to be grateful. So gratitude is not something that anyone should ever expect from others. And so if anyone ever tells you that you should be grateful to them, or expects or becomes upset due to lack of gratitude, then you can be sure that there is a limitation to their generosity, right? Because the original generosity was not done with a pure heart, was not done with a heart free of the need for some sort of return. So to be a true pubakari, the only way is really to be enlightened. An arahant can be considered, the Buddha could be considered a true pubakari, because he had no expectation for any sort of return, any sort of gain for himself. Unlike many parents who have expectations, they expect their children to look after them when they get old, they expect their children to be obedient, they expect their children to make them proud at the very least, and parents become quite upset when their children don't fulfill their expectations and so on. But an arahant, a Buddha or an arahant, an enlightened being, will spend most of their lives helping others, of course, because they have no need for their own gain. They have nothing left for themselves to cultivate. And any time they do cultivate, or they do help others, support others, teach others, and so on, even just provide material support, monks so giving food to other monks or that sort of thing, they do so with absolutely no desire for any sort of return. So this sort of person is the most worth emulating. In some ways, we can think of this as our sort of as a description of the goal that we're aiming for, to be someone who acts without any expectations. I mean, it fits in with the practice of mindfulness, where we don't look towards some result in the future. Our practice of mindfulness is not to get anything or to become anything. Our practice of mindfulness is a very present experience where we're focused only on the experience rather than what we might get out of it. And so we cultivate quality of experience rather than quality of future results. This kind of attitude is somewhat essential, and it's a paradigm shift or a perspective shift that occurs for meditators when they stop looking for future reward. So pupakāri, in a way, is at least a part of what it means to be enlightened, to not worry about the future, to not have expectations, and certainly, most importantly, to not to cling to anything, right? A person who helps others out of a sense of obligation or a sense of expectation of some sort of reward is most certainly not free from clinging. The other side of the coin is gratitude. So, as I said, there's a real danger in stressing emphasizing gratitude to a too strong degree, because again, it's quite common for those who have done things for others to expect gratitude. Where a teacher might expect their students to be grateful and supportive. I mean, this sort of experience I've seen is quite common, where rather than the person giving letting go, they wonder why their students aren't grateful, or any time a student is disobedient, they'll feel that they're not grateful, or if a student abandons the teacher, that they're ungrateful. Nonetheless, it isn't the other side of the coin that enlightened beings, even people who are high-minded, are obviously full of gratitude and appreciation, are quite sensitive to the good deeds of others. One aspect of gratitude that's valuable is that you can have it even for people who are otherwise not worthy of any positive attention. Someone who has negative qualities, has harmed you in the past, and can be a source of real dislike or aversion, you know, can be a source of enmity. This enmity can be fought if you separate and focus only on the good that they have done. One valuable quality of gratitude is this, that it helps us focus on the good qualities of people. Well, they may have many rough aspects to them, but they also can be kind. And I know this because they have helped me in this way or this way. And this is true with most people, that no matter how polluted their minds may be, from time to time, human beings are, for the most part, capable of good deeds. And if you focus on those, it can help you and it can help them as well. When they ask you, why are you helping me? Oh, well, you helped me once in the past. It can help to reinforce those good qualities, even in people who are otherwise immoral, unethical, and so on. It's a really important aspect of Buddhist practice, I think, that you'll find in your life when you focus on the good things that other people have done for you. It helps you change your mind and free your mind from any kind of pollution, and is really valuable for those who are the recipients of your gratitude. You know, parents, for example, telling your parents or explaining to your parents why you are helping them or doing good things for them because of all the good that they've done for you is great for them to hear, and to reinforce in them the goodness that they have performed in their lives, to give them confidence and to help focus their attention. And it works for anyone, friends or relatives. But most importantly, it's a positive quality of ours that we should always strive to cultivate. Right? It frees us from our laziness and our selfishness. It's of course too common for us to not even recognize at all when others have done good things for us, and to forget. It would be the worst if we just forgot and lost track of the things that others have done for us. You find with mindfulness, you're not really able to do this. that through the practice of mindfulness, it keeps cropping up, coming up in your mind, the good things that others have done for you that you've neglected, how you've been ungrateful to those who have helped you. This kind of thing comes up through your meditation. But the practice of gratitude, it takes effort. And so even when you do recognize that others have done good things for you, a fairly common experience is to feel impotent or find excuses and let the opportunity to repay people's kindness go by, pass you by. So we can think about the good that others have done for us and think about how we might pay them back. As with any good deed, it's an important aspect of our practice to cultivate the effort required to actually act on our good intentions, right? I want, even with meditation, when you have the desire to meditate, but don't have the effort to actually get up and do it. It's... Katanyu Katavedi is someone who takes the initiative, who not only knows that others have done good things for them, but they also take the initiative to pay others back. And this sort of attitude is valuable in terms of understanding cause and effect, understanding the nature of reality, because it's an intrinsic part of how the mind works, that those who have helped us are worthy of our gratitude. It's like logic, right? There's something very real. It's not arbitrary, it's not a doctrine or a dogma. It's an aspect of reality that those who have helped us are worthy of our return support. So a valuable part of our practice can be seen as a sign of growth. You know, in some ways, gratitude is not something you can evoke unnaturally. But on the other hand, both of these practices can be undertaken artificially. Now, Pupakari, again, is someone who naturally is inclined to help others whenever they need to help, but you can cultivate this artificially. Even though you might not want to help others, you can think, well, an enlightened being would do this without thinking, would help others without a second thought. So in order to develop that state of enlightenment, this generosity, this kindness will support me on my path. And when we remember about those who have done good things for us, we can cultivate this actively, you know, thinking about what they have done and trying our best to do something, think of some way to repay them and that sort of thing. I mean, these sort of artificial practices can be, these active practices, even though they might not come naturally, as with anything, as with meditation practice as well, the manual cultivation or active cultivation of all sorts of good qualities eventually makes them a part of our nature. And of course, we would all like to be kind and generous, and we would all like to be grateful. It would be great if this was the sort of person we all were. We're not stingy or greedy. Developing these qualities is a valuable part of our practice to help, at the very least, to help show us where we're at and show us our laziness, our greed, our stinginess, and all these things, and help us overcome them. The practice of kindness and generosity and appreciation of the good deeds of others are very valuable parts of our practice. That's the Dhamma for today.